Crisis in Nashville. James Edson White, after a reconversion in 1893, had unselfishly led out in the development of the work in the South, using the Morning Star, which he built, as a missionary boat. He prepared appropriate literature, such as Gospel Primer, to help finance the enterprise and to supply a teaching aid. With his new dedication and consecration, his labors were greatly blessed by God. He led out in the formation of the Southern Missionary Society, an organization the General Conference recognized, to carry the burden of developing work at a time when the church itself was largely underdeveloped in that area and for which finances were limited. But Edson White had one great weakness: he was not a financier. Again and again he had been warned and counseled by his father and his mother in his younger years. As he pioneered the work in the South, his mother warned him again about the perils of becoming involved in business ventures. He was a promoter, and to him every interest in which he was engaged gave promise of unfailing success. Often his close associates did not share his optimism. But he dared to do what others would not attempt. In so doing, he brought about a work that was effective in the winning of souls for the kingdom. A little printing press on the Morning Star made possible the issuance of literature to aid in the developing work. It was but logical that eventually a printing plant should be established at some permanent location in the South. Nashville gave promise of being a good location, so a building was secured and presses, paper cutters, and type were purchased. A dedicated staff launched into the work of a third publishing house in the United States. The overall scheme showed daring and optimism, but it had its weaknesses. God had opened up to Ellen White the need of publishing in the South for the South, but under Edson White's unsteady financial hand, and with the use of worn-out equipment, losses mounted. And all this was taking place at a time when the attention of the denomination was being called to operating on a debt-free policy. In fact, this was a very strong point with A.G. Daniels, the new church leader in 1901. He saw disaster ahead if the cause were to plunge into debt and stay there year after year, as it had in the late 1890s. As church leaders studied the worsening financial situation developing in Nashville, it seemed logical to take steps to reduce the newly established publishing house to that of a book depository and the printing of only some tracts and materials that would be especially useful in the southern states. From a purely business standpoint, this seemed sound, especially when the church had two well-established publishing houses in North America, one in Battle Creek and another in Oakland. Neither of these had sufficient denominational work to keep its presses active, and both continued to do commercial work. Why could not all of the literature that would be needed in the United States be issued from these two houses? At a council meeting held at Elmshaven October 19, 1902, Elder Daniels said, "It has been repeatedly published that the brethren in Nashville were not going into debt, and everybody has understood that a new order of things had set in, and that they were going to have an institution put up without debt. And so they have sent their money in." But the institution was badly in debt, and the people were beginning to discover it. It was suggested that the matter could be cared for if it were handled like other situations of a similar character, except that Ellen White's support of her son's work made it impossible for the brethren to step in and put things right. The question was asked, "Shall we wait another period of time for things to evolve down there? Or has the time come for General Conference leaders and the Southern Union Conference men to get together and in prayerful, thoughtful counsel readjust those matters, and bring the business where it will not continually be going into debt?" To this Ellen White replied, "It has, and I say, go ahead. God's cause must not be left to reproach, no matter who is made sore by arranging matters on a right basis. Edson should give himself to the ministry and to writing, and leave alone the things that he has been forbidden by the Lord to do. Finance is not his forte at all. I want the brethren to feel free to take hold of this matter. I do not want them to make any reference to me. I want them to act just as they would act if my son were not there." The report of the discussions was typed out the same day, and with a feeling of satisfaction, Elder Daniels left California that night. In his pocket, he carried a copy of the interview. On arriving in Battle Creek, he called a meeting of the General Conference Committee and gave a report of the interview in California. He had the assurance that the Lord's messenger was with them in their plans to close up the Nashville printing establishment in a very short time. But the publishing house was not closed. On Monday, within 24 hours of the interview that was held at Elmshaven, Ellen White wrote a letter addressed to Dear Brethren. Last night I seemed to be in the operating room of a large hospital, to which people were being brought, and instruments were being prepared to cut off their limbs in a big hurry. One came in who seemed to have authority, and said to the physician, "Is it necessary to bring these people into this room?" Looking pityingly at the sufferers, he said, "Never amputate a limb until everything possible has been done to restore it." Examining the limbs which the physicians had been preparing to cut off, he said, "They may be saved. The first work is to use every available means to restore these limbs." And another scene passed before her. She seemed to be in a council meeting. E. R. Palmer, leader of our publishing work, was speaking, urging that all our bookmaking should be done by one publishing house, at one place, and thus save expense. She described how one of authority was present and pointed out the perils of a consolidated work. Then she declared, "Let the Southern Field have its own home published books." When Elder Daniels received the letter, he was stunned. Commenting on the experience when the letter came to Battle Creek, he declared, "The message to continue the work of the Southern Publishing Association was truly disconcerting. It brought great disappointment to many. Its contradiction to the counsel given to us in our interview threw some into perplexity." AGD, The Abiding Gift of Prophecy, p. 328. He recalled the experience of Nathan and David. "Then Nathan said unto David, Do all that is in thine heart, for God is with thee. And it came to pass the same night, that the word of God came to Nathan, saying, Go and tell David my servant, Thus saith the Lord, Thou shalt not build me an house, see, Ibid. He recalled that David accepted the message that had come by revelation in place of the counsel given in the interview the preceding day. And as he reported the experience, he said, "Our committee took the same action, Ibid." The whole experience was one in which Ellen White herself was reproved by God, as she explained in a letter to Elder Daniels, written December 7. "When you were here, you laid before me the condition of things in the publishing house at Nashville. You spoke of the terrible financial embarrassment resting on the work there, and gave me the impression that the brethren did not think that anything could be done to set things in order, because Sister White would exert her influence to prevent them from doing what they thought necessary to put matters on a proper basis. Questions were asked me, and I answered them in the light of your representations. I said, If what you say is correct, I will not stand in the way of your doing what you think ought to be done. You said that if you could adjust matters as they would be adjusted if the difficulties existed in any other place, the work would be placed on a sound basis, italics supplied." And then she significantly reported, "The Lord reproved me for accepting any man's version of matters, even Elder Daniels, when he had already given me instruction. I never remember feeling more pained than I did after speaking as I did in the interview with you. I had nothing to say in favor of Nashville. The Lord reproved me for this, and pointed me to those who by his appointment were laboring in Nashville, italics supplied." In a direct testimony of reproof, she wrote, "That there should be an attempt to counterwork the Lord's plans, and to hinder the good work being accomplished in Nashville, that Elder Daniels and others, notwithstanding the light that God has given, should join in this attempt, is an offense to God. He will not endorse their work, nor countenance their course of action." Elder Daniels accepted the message of reproof for the course of action he had proposed on what he felt was sound argument and careful reasoning. The printing establishment was not closed. how he rejoiced when a turn came in the tide. Within a few years, the institution began to gain ground. As he later told the story, he observed, "God, who knows the end from the beginning, sent us messages to prevent us from narrowing the work in a time of discouragement. These messages sometimes seem difficult to understand. They called for superhuman effort. In these later days, we can rejoice more than ever in the guiding hand of God manifested through His servant. I number this experience as one among many that have confirmed my confidence in the divine leadership of God's people through the prophetic gift, AGD, the abiding gift of prophecy, p. 329.